Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Now to the big moment. You'll know my next guest as the dazzlingly deceptive daughter in Luther, alongside starring roles in shows like The Affair and His Dark Materials. She shot stardom with her first role out of drama school as Jane Eyre, for which she was nominated for a BAFTA and a Golden Globe. In 2021, she was awarded an MBE for her services to drama. Now she stars in the imminent BBC genre bender The Woman in the Wall, a gripping tale centred on a mentally struggling survivor of a Magdalene Laundrie's mother and baby home. Here's a taste of what's to come.
An official investigation has begun into Ireland's mother and baby homes. It's believed that thousands of children could have been taken from their mothers without their consent.
Someone said they saw you last night.
Yeah. Doing what?
What the fuck are you two looking at?
Nothing. Just sort of sleepwalking.
When I sleep, I do stuff. Bad stuff.
Well, that's Ruth Wilson in action. And now we're going to hear her live. Ruth Wilson, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello.
This is clearly a passion project. I mean, you were both executive producer and, of course, take the starring role. What was it in particular that animated you about this story?
Well, it was two things, really. I mean, this came to me about 3 years ago, and Joe had written a pilot and they're looking to sort of attach someone to help it get made. And I just thought, well, I knew a bit about the Magdalene Laundries. I'd seen Peter Mullen's Magdalene Sisters. I'd seen Philomena. I remember Tomb being on the radio a few years ago when they found the remains of lots of infants in a septic tank in the mother and baby home. So I knew a bit about the story. It was in my sort of consciousness, but I didn't know that much. So I thought, wow, this is a really important story to keep telling and to get out there and to make people aware of. It surprised us all how few people outside of Ireland know about it. So I thought, okay, it's important material to sort of dramatize. But I also thought there was something really interesting and smart in the way that Joe had structured and framed the piece, the drama. He had done it through genre. So he had framed it through a crime thriller and a sort of psychological horror, which I thought was really smart, actually. And not only does that help bring it to a wider audience, but it also becomes a sort of study of those horrifying experiences of what those women went through. And there's a smart way of dramatizing that. So I thought, actually, this is really smart and it's got huge potential. So that's when I kind of thought, actually, we should do this and push for it and see where we can go with it.
It's interesting. You bring up there the sort of genre bending element of it, if you will, which is a nice shorthand for it.
Yes.
But I thought that it really helped in psychologically understanding the, enormous impact of the sort of experience that your character Lorna had. But it's also quite a risky approach, isn't it? Because, you know, you're dealing with real people's experiences. And actually, one of the things, I was brought up in Ireland, but one of the things that this series points out that I wasn't really aware of, I don't think, was that this went on until 1996. I mean, well into my 20s.
Yeah.
which is, you know, we think of it as something in the past, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, when I first read this script, I thought, oh, it's set in 1950s or maybe 1850s. You know, it felt like gothic horror. And then I thought, and then I, of course, read it and I was like, oh, my God, it's no. The last mother and baby home closed in 96. I think the last laundry closed in 98. So this is very recent history. And it's very, like you say, it's sensitive material because the survivors of those mother and baby homes are still alive, are still fighting for justice or fighting for their for recognition or for certain places to be excavated. So there's still it's still alive in people's real history. So, yeah, we were very aware of how sensitive this material was, really. And I suppose all we could do is, like, at every stage, try and remain, have integrity as we made this about those women's stories. And actually inside the piece, although you have the plot which drives you forward in the crime thriller, or you have the sort of cinematic nature of the psychological horror, the scenes for me that always landed my character and the story were the scenes with the women. And they feel a bit like social realism. In those scenes, you are hearing those stories. You're hearing which Jo had found all those stories from real accounts and real oral testimonies. So we wanted to embed as much truth into this piece as possible. It is drama. It's not, you know, it's not a documentary. But yeah, you're always, we're every stage, we're very feeling hyper-responsible for putting this out there. But I suppose, you know, what our main aim is to start a conversation is for those people that don't know about this. And like you said, you didn't know it was that recent. It's to sort of illuminate those things for people and to start a conversation and hope that people from the drama go and Google and find out a bit more. I mean, there's lots of literature out there. There's books, there's a great book called Light in the Window. There's lots of oral testimonies, which are public domain that people can go and read. And there's a new recent book by Claire Keegan called... actually, I can't remember the title.
Don't worry, that always that happens to me the minute I say there's a brilliant book by. I know. My heart starts sinking.
She won lots of awards for it. It's just recent, but it's a beautiful book. And so there's lots of stuff out there.
Googling it for you as we speak. Yeah. I know exactly the one. And it was a brilliant book, as you say.
Yeah.
Now, you say Joe. I'm going to say Joe Murta, so that everyone knows that he is the writer of this piece. You also star alongside Darrell McCormick, which I'm sorry to be superficial, but I mean, most women would basically take any part to star alongside or spend time with Darrell McCormick. But the interesting thing about Darrell in this is not so much that he plays this young policeman from Dublin investigating it, but I think in his own words, you know, he was brought up by a single mother in County Tipperary. And for him, there was something very personal about taking the part because 10 years earlier, she might have ended up in a place like this. I mean, that's how recent the events we're talking about in this drama are.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that lots of people, actually, lots of cast members on the show knew of someone or had a relation or someone they knew. You know, there was lots of connections within the cast and crew of people that had experiences somehow or knew of people that had experiences of those mother and baby homes. So, yeah, it was very close to lots of people.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's quite the tightrope walk, though, isn't it? You know, dramatizations of real stories. You know, I mean, recently there was the Grenfell play and so on, and people do take it very, very personally, and people can be accused of sort of stealing experiences and things. Did you worry about that at all, or were you so convinced by the power of the story?
No, we were very worried about it. I mean, throughout the whole process of writing, developing, in the filming of it, in the execution and in the edit and the music, you know, at every point it's been, we tussle with that all the time. And there's a fine line of wanting to get as many people watching this as possible and to sort of enlighten them in a way, or just put a spotlight on this story.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line. Yeah. And we all felt it, definitely. But I think it's where you take risks in drama. You want to put people's stories out there. You don't want them to be exploited or to feel exploited. So you're trying to deliver it. I can't really control how people are going to respond to it. We just do our best to make it as honest as possible, and to make that performance as honest as possible. And to, you know, I mean, there's a shred of humour within it too. I mean, what I loved when I read it was like, oh, there's a sort of very dark humour in this, which is also... it's needed.
But that's why I'm saying that I think it's incredibly brave, and I don't mean that in a sort of patronising way, because I think it brings all these elements in and you realise how important they are. But the humour, you sort of go, oh, God, he just made a bit of a joke. You know, there's a sort of cop double act thing going on with the two policemen and so on. I'm going to put you out of your misery. It's small things like these is the Claire Keegan book,
that's
I think,
right,
that you're thinking of.
Beautiful book.
There you go. Now, you've also said, I think, about this project that growing up Catholic piqued your interest in it. And you did go, I think, to an all-Catholic girls' school. So in what way did that make you... I mean, I'm presuming it wasn't anything like a Magdalene Laundry, but I myself also went to Catholic schools in Ireland. And, you know, there were times when it was quite a struggle, and there were evil nuns. Did you have any experiences like that?
The school I went to, actually, it's still a convent, but there were very few nuns teaching. So we had a headmistress who was a nun, and we had an RE teacher who was a nun, but actually very few of the teachers were still nuns. But we had mass every week, I think, every Friday.
And you've credited that with kind of inspiring you to become an actor in a way, haven't you?
Well, I think I say I don't ever inspire me to become an actor, but I think there was...
it was the church that did it.
Yeah, the church that did it. I just think there's something quite... the Catholic Church does, you know, it's different to the Protestant Church, is that it has iconography and smells. And it's very, as a kid, it's very heady. You know, it's like you know, it's the transforming the... body and blood of Christ, you know, drinking the blood of Christ. That's intense. You know, that's intense stuff. And I think that can't help but make an impression on children and, you know, community. And so I think, I don't know, it's just one theory that I came out, you know, when I was thinking about it. It's like, wow, it does infiltrate sometimes the way that I address a character. Like I will see an arc of a character as sort of sin, you know, consequences, redemption, as a three-piece, you know, in an arc of how I would structure the journey of a character. So I do sometimes come to material with a slight religious and certainly Catholic element or lens. And that's just from the way that I've been, what I was brought up in and what I went to every week. But so I sort of think, that obviously I don't go to church anymore. I don't have a relationship with the church anymore. My dad still goes. But I find the hypocrisy of some of the things that are taught against some of the actions. And I suppose that's what this show is a bit about as well, the hypocrisy of those two things. That's quite hard for me personally to kind of still manage.
I have to say, reading your clippings, as one does, hypocrisy seems to be something that riles you in general. Why do you think that's...
I don't know. I don't know. I sort of, yeah, headlines are headlines. But look, life is like, there's people you come across, there's things that, you know, humans interest me, and that's why I do the job that I do. I'm sort of forever interested in contradictions, and a lot of my characters are hypocritical. Or, I mean, Mrs. Coulter and His Dark Materials, you know, is a kind of prime example of that. And so I sort of feel that I'm interested in that. I mean, it frustrates me, but I'm also fascinated by it. And
how difficult is it then working, you know, as you do in a business? You know, I mean, Hollywood is an easy shorthand for it, but, you know, more generally, that in a way, you know, you're confronted by contradictions, if we want to call them contradictions, on a daily basis, whether it comes with sort of the supporting of causes and things like that, mm. or the dealing with, you know, very sensitive you know, material.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think I partly feel I have a responsibility. You know, if you get to a position where you can, your name can help greenlight something, then, you know, you have partly a responsibility to tell stories that are going to, you know, not only entertain, but can educate or can ask questions. I mean, part of me thinks work art should ask questions, and should ask questions of those in power, ask questions of those in authority, ask questions of just the normal person coming in and watching. So I sort of think that's the purpose of telling stories and making art, is for that reason. So I think if I'm in a position where I can sort of lend my name to those questions, that's great. And that's what I want to do, make my career about, is asking those questions. And it's as much for me asking those questions as it is for the people watching those shows. And I don't necessarily know what the answers are. I don't have the answers. I'm just asking the questions. So I think that's kind of, for me, that's what I'm interested in. The human condition is really interesting and complex. And
you also like a challenge. Just finally, let's talk about another extraordinary project you undertook, which I just look at and sort of quail at the prospect, a 24-hour play called The Second Woman. When I say a 24-hour play, you were literally on stage 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 4 a.m. The next morning. You say I'm not surprised, you've only got fractured memories of it. I'm surprised you've got any memory of it at all.
Yeah, no, it's sort of disappearing. Like, all you realize that's how life works. It's just those, you know, because time wasn't delineated in the same way. So it's like, it's one full 24 hours. It's very hard to sort of know it, even believe it happened. So I woke up the next day feeling like, I'm not even sure. Was that just a dream? It was the most extraordinary experience, I have to say. I didn't know really what I was going into and what it was going to be like. And I didn't expect people to stay for that long. The audiences ended up, I thought people would leave after an hour and a half. People ended up staying 7 hours, 8 hours, more. You know, I think there's about 20 people that ended up staying the whole 24 hours watching.
Masochist. No, but, I'm sure it was brilliant, yeah. But nevertheless.
But it was just, it was like a, you know, the thing is that I think what's happened since COVID, and, you know, with streaming and certainly in the entertainment world, that people aren't communing in the same way. We're not going out to as many things. We're watching stuff inside, everything's through the lens or the fulcrum of your, you know, your
screen.
Camera, mm. Your screen or your phone. And so actually to be present in a room with people was extraordinary, and everyone feeling part of something very unique and different, and everyone staying up and sleeping on outside in the Young Vic.
Indeed, I think this should be gold stars for the 20 who lasted the 24 hours. Ruth Wilson, yeah. It's totally delightful to talk to you, and I really enjoyed the programme, or at least the two episodes I've seen so far.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Cross Wires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.